Christopher Sparrow. This is the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 20. Larry solved his pixie problem. Sort of. I'm Christopher Sparrow, the editor-in-chief over at itechgear.org. This episode is recorded live Sunday, June 12th, 2022. As I said, I'm Christopher Sparrow, and that chuckle that you kind of sort of heard there briefly was Dr. Mr. Larry McJunkin, former co-owner of Wugnet Publications. How are you, Mr. McJunkin?
I am doing okay, given it's been kind of a long week in our house, and that plus full-blown summer has finally arrived here in Knoxville. Temperature and humidity well above 90, both of them. So I'm ready for winter already.
Thank you. Yes. Well, it won't be too long, you know.
I hope not.
It won't be too long. And that myriad guffaw there was Mr. Joel McLaughlin, former contributing writer over at Gear Diary and currently the host of the Linux Link Tech Show and Living in the Shade of the 80s Arcade podcast. Welcome back from self, Mr. Joel.
Yes, the Southeast Linux Fest was as good as always. I'll get into that a little more later because we don't want to forget our other host.
Well, do we really? Crap. So our other host... our other host and actually guffawing very, very loudly is Mr. Chris Cavula, former contributing editor over at Gear Diary and Pocket Now. What's up, Mr. Chris?
You actually think I'd let myself be forgotten?
No.
Oh, please.
No.
You know, it's funny. I appreciate what Larry's saying because I just got back earlier this week from Mobile, Alabama. Where
and boy, are your arms tired?
Well,
I was going to use that.
We're 90 plus where the weather is, you know, humid with soup to breathe. You know, it's just kind of how it is. So now I'm back up north and it looks like next week the hot weather's following me up here. So
yes,
here we go.
Here we go, kids. The dog days of summer are a pantom. They are a pantom.
Yes.
You know, what's interesting is I heard a little Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee birdie told me that Larry sort of, and emphasis on the sort of, solved his pixie problem. So what's going on there, Larry? Oh, Larry.
Well, gee, he doesn't want to talk to us anymore.
Apparently not.
See, now you've angered the pixies.
I kind of angered the pixies. Maybe Mr. McJunkin has stepped away. Why don't we go ahead and just move on just for a little bit and talk a little bit about how Android is silently.
Hey, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Oh,
there he is.
Yes. Well,
you know what? That was his topic too. So
yeah.
You know, I'm having a heck of a time with this new microphone, this Yeti, and I just can't figure out when the mute is on and when the mute is off. I've got to find a better way.
But it's anyway, whenever the mute hits you.
Yes.
It's whenever my compadre will say, hey, we've lost Larry.
You go stand in the corner.
Hey, bottom.
So on the mic button, there should be a green and a red light.
It's operator error.
Yeah, you've got to watch the colors there. But talk to us a little bit about this solved sort of pixie problem.
Well, about a week ago, I was in a local mall. Of course, the one that has our Apple store in it.
Uh-oh.
And my Pixel 6 Pro decided it was kind of lonely and it needed someone to play with. So I bought it a Playmate, an iPhone 13 Pro. Right now, they're having this really good time together. So I think I'm just going to keep them both because, you know, especially since the June QPR 3 Pixel update has magically resolved my fingerprint sensor problem on the P6P.
Yeah, no, honestly, this is the one that was really bothering you the most.
I mean, seriously,
I was
when you Google this problem, I mean, a lot of folks had it really bad, and I was one of them. I know you guys weren't affected nearly as bad, but this was not listed amongst the goodies included in this update. So anyway, I'll keep you sort of updated on how these two Playmates get along together. But one other thing I discovered while the P6P is in this sort of a reprieve period is that I do not agree with those who say a dark theme does not really help with battery life. In fact, I think I'll go so far as to hoist the Bravo Sierra flag on this one, because I was getting terrible battery life. I was dead by 5 or 6 p.m. And I changed to a dark wallpaper. I turned on dark theme 100%, I mean, 24/7. And now, two nights in a row, I have like anywhere from 15 to 30% power at midnight. So I cannot be any longer told that this doesn't work.
I think it's not just a combination. It's not just dark theme, though, Larry. I think the apps that you use have to play along, and you have to pick the right background.
Well, all my apps play with dark theme.
So as long as all of those things are true, I think you're right. But I do know a lot of people that say, oh, it doesn't work. Well, they're using apps that are unusually bright all the time. Dark theme isn't going to help you if your app doesn't, you know.
And you're absolutely right. And there's it's kind of like that other age old problem. Is it better on your eyes, black on white, your eyes, white on black? My optometrist clearly looked me in the eye. He said, I'm here to tell you, white print on a black background is way better on your eyes. You do what you want.
I think it depends on how they drew it, whether they pixelated it correctly and not that kind of thing, and how they
handle it.
It depends on the device and how they handle it. For the longest time I used the Kindle app, and it's white on black was terrible. It was just bad. It was hard to read. It was grainy looking.
But it's a different technology. And
well, I'm not talking about the Kindle machine. I'm talking about the Kindle app running on devices. And it wasn't better in my opinion. I ended up going back to black letters on white. And it was probably just had to do with how they're rendering the text in their app. Right. But having said that, I would say in general, with most apps, I've seen it look just gorgeous, you know, that way.
The last thing I had on this was today. I was early this morning. I was flipping around on YouTube and I stumbled upon this well done torture test video for the Pixel 6 Pro. I mean, this guy literally brutalized the phone. Box cutter on all four sides, digging holes in the plastic, what little there is. Glass on the front and the back, the camera bar, fire test on the display, the torch. I mean, the only place which was really the only place it didn't hold up too well, it did burn some pixels out. So his conclusion was, other than the plastic parts, which really shouldn't have survived anyway, the P6P is a really tough phone. He was quite impressed.
I always got the feeling it was real solid. I mean, I like the one. We all have them, and I like them.
Yeah,
and they're very solid.
Anyway, that's it. So I'll keep you kids updated. But right now, we don't know anything more than we know.
But I'm glad that your lonely P6P now has a less durable playmate, somebody to keep it company.
But in general, you're happy with the June update that came out for these devices.
Oh, I definitely am. I mean, everything that they said they fixed, they did. Nothing was truly earth shattering. I, for one, really like they brought back when you're on silence and you have on vibrate, you now get notified in the upper right hand corner like the old Pixels used to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm very still happy. I'm still very happy with the phone.
I think those little refinements are the things that make us happy with our devices. You're right.
Sometimes it's not the great big things. Right. It's the little things.
It's the little things. I think we all talked about, we'd love to see devices come back with LED notifiers. They're little things. Mm-hmm. But what you're just saying is it's kind of the same. It's in the same alley anyway.
Well, that release fixed the bug I was impacted by, the keyboard issue. Every once in a while, I couldn't get the keyboard to pop up. I've not had a problem since I loaded the update. So,
no, that's good to hear.
So that's, so there.
Oh, thumbs up on the update.
yeah. It's pretty, it came okay. It's okay. Some of those I wish, and I think Larry would agree with me, I wish would have been resolved before they released the phone. Yeah. I can live with the way it is. It's impossible to bring out a perfect product, no matter what.
I agree. Contrast, the Microsoft Surface Duo, their June update, apparently, well, I've been reading some stuff, and Chris, maybe you saw this as well. that they took away original Surface Pen support from it for some reason.
Yeah, they did.
And I'm not sure why, but you know, but they added some features to the thin pen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if one was related to the other, but I thought that was an interesting stuff. By the same token, so, you know, on the Pixel, we're happy with the June update. On the Surface, some people are a little less
not
happy.
Not so happy with the update. Now, you know, a lot of times, let's just say this, you know, we've discussed this point before, Chris. I know you and I have many times.
Yeah.
The fact that we're getting updates at all on a mobile device
is huge.
Yeah. All right. I don't care what Apple does. I don't care what any of the Android OEMs or what Google does for their phones. The fact that you get an over-the-air update at any time during the usable life of your phone or other mobile type device is an amazing thing.
And we have to remember that other than Apple, that wasn't the norm very, very short time
absolutely
ago.
it really wasn't.
Along that same line, I think Google has taken a page or two out of Apple's playbook regarding fixing things quietly, not making a big deal out of them.
Yep.
Apple's been doing this for decades, and yet
they have
now finally. I think that's what happened with the fingerprint sensor. It wasn't in the list, but yet it's fixed.
Yep, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I think you're right, but the fact that we are getting updates on for our phones in some cases 3, 4 years, 5 years after its initial purchase is an amazing thing. So I'm happy that we're getting the updates that we are. I am in no way, shape, or form looking a gift horse in the mouth. I am not feeling any entitlement. Like my phone from last year should run this new update. Nah, I'm surprised and pleased and happy that it does. All right. But that's just me, and only because I've been doing this for 30 years or so. All right. So, but that's just me.
What does he say in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? And you're just lucky to be here.
That's a yes.
Chris, I keep telling you, Chris, the solution is buy a new phone every year.
I know. Worry about that. That's very, very true. But unfortunately,
or buy multiple phones.
Yeah, well, there is that too. Pixie problem solved. Boom.
Please shift the topic for us.
Yeah. But now, Larry, tell me about this next issue that you were kind of excited about. The Android silently picks up long-awaited MDNS feature. Talk to me a little bit about
it. I don't know that I was I brought it up when I read the article about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, multicast DNS is probably something most people don't even know what it is and probably don't care. But for those of us who have a lot of smart home devices, a lot of stuff on our networks, mm-hmm. I mean, what multicast DNS protocol does, it resolves the host names that go to the IP addresses within small networks that don't include a local name server, which obviously home networks don't. And it's like a zero configuration based system. And I don't know, it's just, it's always been around and worked, but it never was on Android. And Joel probably even knows more about this than I do. I knew what it was. And now we can have names, real names.
For being honest, I've actually been able to do that thanks to my router. So it's never been an issue for me.
But MDNS, the thing about MDNS is you didn't require that stuff.
Right.
The device, it was on the local broadcast domain, but we're local.
I guess I'm just excited that they're doing something like this with Android. I mean, you know, on one hand, we hear Android's going away, and the next hand, they're fixing stuff. So I don't know.
Well, and I think sorry, Joel, I didn't mean to step
on. I was going to say, I make heavy use of my router has the ability to assign the same IP address. Not only that, but also a host name via DHCP to the device every single time. So no device needs to have a different configuration. So I could always use a host mode, but I'm a bad boy. Well, I use IP addresses all the time. So
and I think a lot of services have kind of figured out their own, like, you know, if you have an HP device, the HP device announces itself 17 ways to Sunday on your network. If you have Apple devices, the Apple devices all know how to find each other's names without even blinking. So it becomes kind of a non-event for those folks. But it is true that in Android, it was a little more vanilla and they didn't automatically do a lot of this stuff. Why should they? You know, right. There's lots of different manufacturers doing lots of different things. So I kind of get it. I think it's an interesting addition. I don't know. I think it's like you kind of said a minute ago, Larry. I mean, it should have come a long time ago. They probably should have done this a long time ago, but I'm not sure that most people are going to notice the fact that they didn't.
No, they won't.
No, it's really going to affect people like us more than you know, people that set up a home server. Well, or something.
It might affect developers, you know, who are building drivers, who are building devices. They're going to care, you know, to get their stuff. You know,
it's kind of like you ask the average guy or girl on the street, what do you think about Apple Bonjour?
It's the same. It's really almost the same conversation.
Is that an ice cream or what?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what this is. But having said that, I put this in the same bucket as what we just got done saying. These refinements are nice things to have. You know, it's a mature system. It's time we get some you know, of these kinds of refinements. And it's great to see, even if most people don't know what it is.
You know, when I look at this from if you look at it a little bit from a marketing perspective, it's kind of like having four car dealerships on the same intersection. They're all going to do better. And if you had one a mile apart from each other.
True.
Now you've got the big three and four here are starting to play better with each other. They're learning from each other. And the only people who are really going to benefit are you and I.
Well, consumers. I'm going to the one that has the best coffee in their customer lounge. That's, you know, that's just how it is.
Right?
You're here. Yep. And speaking of the best coffee in their customer lounge, did you guys happen to see or happen to hear that Meta has dropped its Apple Watch competitor?
They've had one
project. Yeah, a lot of folks are saying exactly that. Really? They had one? I knew nothing about it. Well, apparently,
that was my reaction. That was for sure.
Now, I had heard something about this. Apparently, the watch was supposed to be Apple Watch looking. It was Apple Watch shaped, squared with rounded corners, single button on one side.
All we ever saw was the frame of it, though. I mean,
yeah, I know. I mean, the only thing we really ever saw on this were you know, vague sort of very, very obvious renders. It was supposed to have two cameras and you know, annoy you even more with Facebook notifications and whatnot. You know, it was supposed to be released sometime next year in 23 with a price tag of around $350.
Well, do you think that the dropping, did they give a reason for the dropping, or do you
sort
think
of mostly, yes
and, or is it because most of us didn't even know it?
Sort of yes and right. Sort of no. The first basic reason it's basically that the whole idea, the design interfered with other sensors and they were having some technical problems with camera placements and the way to go ahead and quickly change straps. And so there were some technical problems that they were having. There was a second reason that was sort of proposed, and it was more along the lines of budget cuts. I guess
because most of us didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, Zuck took a look at it and said, man, this thing is just, it's going to go nowhere. It's gotten little to no traction. No one's excited about this. And, you know, it's been going for 2 years. It's been going for 2 years. I got nothing done.
Right. The thing is, though, is other than Oculus, has any of their stuff gone anywhere? And the truth really is no. I mean, do you really want a Facebook portal? I don't, because I think it's just creepy.
I don't need Zuck in my living room asking if I can step a little closer, and show him exactly what I'm working on.
But right. Even with Oculus was Oculus before they owned it. So, true.
Correct.
True.
Yeah. Right. So since then, I don't think that they've done. And funny thing is, the Oculus 2 is actually I'm going to call it a cheaper device than its predecessor in
I just many, don't look in at many Meta ways. As a hardware yeah. innovator. They're just
that's where I'm going with this is I don't think they necessarily really know how to deliver hardware per se. That's not their thing.
I personally that have them beef up their existing service and increase the amount of control that we can put on certain things, fix their moderation system.
I was going to say, fix the things that people have been complaining about. Stop.
Yeah. I mean, those are all the things that, I mean, my son got a Facebook ban for a week because he posted too many cat pictures. I'm not joking.
Another person that I know of, her birthday is today, and last year she got banned for thanking people too many times.
Yes, that happened to another friend of mine too, which is completely and stupidly ridiculous. I mean, it's just, you know, those are the things I'd rather they spend time on.
There's lots of good reasons to ban people, let's face it. But
thanking them for happy birthday wishes is not
pick a few good ones instead of bad ones.
Well,
you know, right. I mean, you know. I don't know. It's a very challenging time. And right now I think a lot of places, a lot of things are trying to protect our privacy or protect us from receiving too much spam or whatever it might be. And they're not getting it quite right.
Maybe they should do that. Well, see, and this is exactly where I'm going. While I appreciate the effort and the drive on their part to provide me with a convenience, stop it. I'm a big boy. I'm an adult. All right.
Right.
Believe it or not,
I'm not sure I agree with that. You know?
Yeah.
Believe it or not, yep. Chris, I am in fact an adult.
Really?
Yes.
Wait a minute. I have Michelle on the other line here.
Oh, shut up.
And I don't believe I saw the memo, but that's okay.
Okay. No, right. but seriously, I can, there are decisions like this that I can make on my own. There are things that I can go ahead and
how do you
choose
stop
to do as opposed to have you choose to not do them?
I guess that's where I'm going there. How do you stop the spam? I mean, you know, we've all complained about, we used to complain about spam phone calls all the time, you know, in decades gone past.
Right.
And there's nothing we could do for ourselves about that. The phone carrier had to stop that for us. So I'm not sure I entirely agree with you that we can do all of this for ourselves. We can't. We don't have the technique. We don't have the technologies to do it all.
All of it, but the only thing that I can say, you asked me, how do you stop spam? Stop signing up for them damn lists.
But sometimes you get signed up without realizing it.
Just to see how much of a discount you may get on this site when you spin the big wheel for a fabulous price.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people do it to themselves, but I think there's a lot that comes outside of that. You know, without you realizing that they've done it.
I agree, but I'm going to say at least 50% of the spam that you probably receive, you do it to yourself. Stop signing up for shit. You don't
a lot of
it.
That.
You don't want all the junk emails. Well, stop signing up for shit.
There's a lot of that, and there's a lot of bots on Facebook too. Well, I think it's just as bad as Twitter.
I do too, and I think the big thing is, again, it's not just Facebook. It's, you know, obviously well beyond Facebook as well, but I think I don't think the mechanisms are always in our ability to control. However, I think one thing that Facebook and others could do is it could just make them more transparent. I need to know who's doing this to me. If I'm going to stop it, I need to know they're doing it.
Right.
I can't find it out after the fact. So I think that's where they need to work to improve the service. You know, it sounds terrible because I'm going to say this poorly, but tell me who you're selling my freaking name to. You know,
no, I get it. No, and it didn't come out poorly. It's very direct and to the point. But the other thing I think that everybody needs to be reminded of is, kids, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Giving away something for it. All right.
Yeah.
Whether it is your privacy or whether it is space, in your email inbox, you're going to get, there's some level of cost.
But I do think they could tell us better who's getting it. And that would allow us to go to them and say, I don't want your crap.
Right. Stop filling out the surveys. Stop putting in your phone number. Stop throwing in your email address for this contest, that contest, the other contest. Because I can guarantee you, the moment that you do that, your stuff's going to go all over the web. It's going to show up in some marketer's inbox, and they're like, oh, wonderful. There's somebody else that I can go ahead and try to get to buy my stuff.
And right? I want to point out that it's not, and I said, it's not just Facebook. It was a requirement of my job to be on LinkedIn. No sooner did I sign up for LinkedIn and I get a buttload of goofy promos and things from people that are related to the fact that I have a LinkedIn account. It had nothing to do with me signing up for anything.
Yep.
And so the point is, everybody, they're not alone. Everybody's doing this, and I'm happy to take responsibility. You, like you said, we're big boys. You know, we can handle this stuff.
Most
but we have
people,
to know it. We have to know.
Here are adults. Most people that but we have to know to this, about our it. Fan is an adult. Okay?
Our fan is an adult, but we have to know. And if we're not being told, we can't work the problem. And that's where I think the work needs to be done.
And I happen to agree, but you know, stop doing it to yourself and know and understand that there is no free lunch.
And that'll cut some of it. You're absolutely right.
I truly, truly believe that that'll cut.
Do you really need another copy of Candy Crush?
Right. All right. I mean, you can only, you've only got one other account. All right. And know and understand that the moment that you you're going to get hit with notification spam, you're going to get hit with text spam, you're going to get hit with email spam, and every company that's out there that you buy something from does it, every single one.
I want to know, you know, those games that you see out there that pay real money. How are they paying real money? Where is their funding coming from?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's exactly. All these kinds of things. There's all these things. Like you said, there's no free lunch. All this is coming from somewhere, somehow. Yes. And for some reason, they're getting something from you or they wouldn't do it.
Yes. Otherwise, they wouldn't be paying real money.
That's right. So,
there you
fun,
go.
Fun, fun, fun. Here we go.
Speaking of real money, all right, there happens to be some proposed changes that are going on with a few pieces of legislation, not only in Europe, in the European Union, but in the Netherlands specifically. And there was, from what I understand, a bill that made it through the Senate here in the States recently related to monopoly-related definitions, laws, changes, et cetera, to those kinds of things. Mac Rumors has an interesting article about an App Store rule change and dating apps. So, Chris, you were talking a little bit about this pre-show. So,
I think there's a whole lot of activity in governments around the world lately to try to do what they view as reining in these big tech companies. And there's and they kind of come out in a bunch of ways. In the Dutch rules, it had to do with the dating apps and the percentages taken and what the payment methods were allowed, that kind of thing. In the US, it's about allowing things like side loading and other kind of controls. And in the EU, there's trying to mandate which power connectors everybody uses and all of these things. And I think, and the broader stroke, I mean, these are all kind of happening around the same time frame right now. Everybody's getting all charged up and excited about, you know, they all want to hang Apple and Google and Microsoft up, you know, for their quote unquote practices. And what's interesting about it is, I think what we're talking about is a lot of the folks who are reviewing these things and making these decisions are not technology people. And when they bring technology people in to try to explain how something is or why something is, they're not always listened to. And
this is what bothers me the most about this.
And I think there's some good things coming out of it. I mean, from a consumer perspective, but I think that a lot of it is not going to benefit the consumer. And that concerns me. And people are like on this, they've got this like momentum going now. And I don't seem to be able to stop themselves, even if they should, you know.
Yes, but every time I see or hear something about the FCC and the rules that they tried to put in place, or the U.S. government getting involved in payment systems and payment apparent or supposed payment system monopolies for both Apple and Google, Google Play related app stores. It just annoys the living daylights out of me because the last people in this world, or in this country at least, that should be making decisions about technology stacks and what is and isn't allowed are those yahoos in Washington, D.C.
Or anywhere in the world. I mean, any of the government people making these decisions.
They
know,
are not technical. They have back, no
they
understanding.
They can't even open their iPhones.
I mean, so no, back, literally. Back, no.
Or even mute them during a hearing. I mean, come
Thank
on.
Thank you, Joel. Oh,
no kidding. Right. But if you go back 100 years ago when they broke up AT&T, you know, back in the day, AT&T said a lot of...
Yes.
Well, even before that, they broke it up, or even earlier than that, they started to break those things up. Those the monopoly things that get going against AT&T for a long time. What I'm getting at is you go back all that, you know, 50 years, 100 years, and you look at what was going on. Even today, even after the breakup, we're using a lot of the standards that AT&T set, and they wouldn't have set those standards had they not had the control position that they had. And we're still using those things as kind of guidelines for how we do telecommunications today. The problem was they broke them up into baby bells, and the baby bells didn't really know what the heck they were doing, and it created a whole bunch of other problems. And I think again, there was some good out of it, but there was a lot of bad out of it too. And again, it's because the people who come up with these rules and these ideas, they're looking to solve a very specific problem without looking at the consequences of solving that problem the way that they're solving it.
Well said. And then you have the people like Time Warner who came in and knew nothing about anything about phone companies and bought a bunch of them. And it turned out to be all about the money.
It turned out to be all about the money, and it didn't do anybody any good.
Always all about the money. It's always all about the Benjamins. Always.
It really, really is. And unfortunately, like I said, their end results usually on the whole, on the balance, don't turn out to be better for us. We might get some little things that are better, but we get a whole lot of things that are negative out of the equation. And I kind of just wish these people would stop trying to justify their own positions and just, you know, stay out of it. Because they don't understand what they don't understand.
Unfortunately, like you said, though, they see a piece of the pie. They see a pie floating around. They
Everybody
see
wants
taking
to be
pieces
part
of it.
Of the
and they want theirs.
Thing.
Yeah, they all want to be part of the next big thing. So there's actually an interesting thing. I don't know if you guys watch like the Apple TV for All Mankind, those kind of shows. And they have this kind of fake future history. And in one of the future histories that they talk about, the U.S. government actually kept control on the internet instead of allowing it to form in the first place like they did. So the real world is we let the internet kind of become its thing. And in this history, they didn't. They had controls. And
nobody told Al Gore.
Yeah, well, the point I'm getting at is that there's some interesting decisions that, you know, happen when you do those kinds of things. And I think it's interesting that we got lucky in the sense that we had an open internet in this country that established before people could start to think about, oh, well, how do we put controls on it?
Agreed. And I'm not saying
that there could be benefits for some controls. I'm not saying that. There are obviously some social issues that come up that would be better had we been able to control them. However, what's the side effect of that? Now you're limiting free speech and you're limiting other things.
Agree.
I don't know. You know, I don't have all the answers here, but I do have a lot of questions.
All the questions. You have all the questions.
I have all the questions.
Yes.
If you need any, I'll sell them to you cheap. No.
There you go. So obviously there's a lot that's going on. And nothing has been finalized yet. I don't think anywhere in the world in terms.
And I'm sure we'll report on them as they come.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we'll go ahead and we'll curse them as they come out. But right now, nothing is really been set in stone.
But I think it's
cement
good that
is still being mixed, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's good that we talk about these things though, and share it with our one customer, our one.
Yeah, yes. My mother will be very appreciative of all.
And once again, tell her we thank her.
Yes.
or we should say we thank her for her service.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So, but the last piece that I want to talk about though, in our mobile and Linux segment, heavy on the Linux, at least now, is the Southeastern Linux Fest for SELF 2022.
Yes.
Joel, talk to us a little bit about what happened while you were there.
Cool. So it wrapped today, just about 3 or 4 hours ago. And I had actually left early because I'd seen the last talk I wanted to see, and I didn't really need to see the closing remarks because I know what they are. Because I'm really close, and I know got a good relationship with the guy who is the benevolent dictator of the Southeast Linux Fest, Jeremy Sands, who is always the kindest host. I would say it was definitely smaller than it has been in years past. That was to be expected, with this being the first one back since COVID.
Yeah.
Sure.
But probably the hardest thing now, they had kind of this sweetheart deal with the airport, the Sheraton airport, Sheraton Charlotte Airport is where it was. Okay. And they had literally all they would usually have to do is show up, and their cabling and fiber was all in the ceilings and plug in, and everything was great. You know, that was been that way for years, but recently, because hey, nobody's staying here, so we might as well remodel the thing. So it looked really nice, but they tore out all their network connections. So nice. Friday was a little rough, and we did actually have several presenters were unable to present because they did contract COVID, not at the show, before the show, obviously. But I watched several, went to several of the talks. Probably the biggest thing with these is there's always multiple things at the show that I'd like to see, but I can't because I got to pick one in an hour block. So probably one of the most interesting ones I saw was, and it was a, the name of the, I'm trying to look back on my Facebook, but of course it's being a hassle on me right now. System 76 did a segment on building open source hardware. The actual one was pushing open hardware into space, which I thought was going to be about actually putting open hardware into space, but it wasn't. It was about the system, which is I listed in a pic, but I don't really look at it as an official pic. But it's a System 76 is Thelio, I think that's how you say it, Thelio, a desktop. System 76 is based in Denver, Colorado. And that is actually where this is made. And I think it's the very first one where they didn't buy off-the-shelf cases. They made their own case. They designed this thing. It's a desktop system primarily. And there's actually multiple levels from the Thelio all the way up to the Thelio Massive. Actually, I don't know if that's the top one or not, because I would call the Mega probably the top one. The Massive, it has Xeon CPUs, is probably more of a server than the Mega would be. But the Mega will hold up to, and of course it's going to cost you, of course, 88 terabytes of storage in the case.
This in stuff the case. Looks cool. I'm up here looking. Wow.
Right. Yeah. No, the it looks case nice. Itself, the case itself, they completely made in house. It's covered in the wood veneer, and you can pick the color of it too. If I were to order one, it would be blue, because there's like a blue wood stained veneer. But it starts at the low price, and this is just the starting prices, and each one you can add and customize and put what you want on it. But it starts at $999 and goes all the way up to $5,249 for the base level of the Thelio Mega, and that's actually only $250 off. Now,
but the cool part is it's really configurable. I mean, all
absolutely. Yeah. Even the base level Thelio, you can load up to 48 terabytes of storage in this thing, And they designed, they literally designed, if you look up above where the systems are, they literally designed something called Thaleo.io, which is basically the way you plug in all your SATA drives into it.
Mm-hmm. And, hey, Joel, do you know who designed who built their QHD displays, the two of them they offer?
I do not know.
Probably Dell or somebody.
Yeah, it's probably, they might be.
But I mean, it's like cool. That. They offer the whole turnkey thing. I mean, everything.
Yep. And the OS that comes on it is Pop OS, which is a derivative of Ubuntu, or Debian, depends on how much of a stickler you want. But being it's all designed with Linux in mind, pretty much any Linux distro should run on this with no problems.
But they do also offer Ubuntu 22, don't they?
That's a good question.
I knew they offered Ubuntu. I just don't remember which version it is.
Yeah, I think you can, but even if they don't, it's not a big deal to just throw it on it. I mean, I've seen this system in person, and it is gorgeous. I mean, it is so pretty. I haven't bought a desktop in years, but I would really like to buy one of these. Probably not going to happen, but that's was one presentation. Another one was presented by Alan Hicks was on whether IPv6 will be adopted or not, and how he thinks it's not going to be.
We've been trying to push IPv6 for years without much success. I can't see it changing anytime soon.
Yep. Well, and that's basically
but the problem is we're out of IP addresses, though.
We've been out of IP addresses again for a long time.
For about 3 years.
Let me rephrase that. Public IP addresses.
Yes.
So, right.
But it was a really good one. I am hoping that some of these sessions are recorded because there's a couple that I wanted to watch. Another one I went to was on SDR, Software Defined Radio, because the great thing about Southeast Linux Fest, it doesn't all have to, when you propose a talk, it doesn't all have to be Linux. So he had Daryl Little had several software defined radios used, most of them were USB dongles. The one I always wanted and I still haven't gotten around to buying is the Hack RF1. Which basically will go from, like, I don't know if it goes all the way down to 5 gigahertz, but it will go into the ham bands. So it is a transceiver, although the power is very low. It's like a half watt. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
So you if you can build an amplifier for it, then you could truly play with it there.
Hope.
Right. The last one I saw was this morning was how to make Ansible suck less. Ansible is something I use heavily. We use Ansible playbooks in my job. I'm going to be writing them as well. That was a really good session. But probably my most favorite thing about any Linux Fest has nothing to do with the talks, but it has everything to do with the hallway track. And it was just wonderful to see all the folks that I've known in the Linux community for over the years for the first time since the pandemic. I got to meet Amber Grainer, who I'm trying to remember who she works for, but she was flying in from Toronto and was just parked like feet from the hotel. So she thought she'd come over and got to meet her and talk to her and Eugene Ma, Jeremy himself. Jeremy has this big, I'm trying to remember what breed of dog, but this thing is like a horse. And his name's Fred, and we call him he's like the unofficial mascot of the show. And he always following Jeremy around during the show. The hotel doesn't care. You know, they're fine with him being there. But it's a great show. And I'll definitely be back. I'm just not sure if I'm going to go back next year. We'll see.
Sure.
We'll have to see how much the economy was. You see, gas was round trip. Gas was about $100 for me.
Mm-hmm.
Filled up. I can make it on one tank from Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what I spent getting down from Detroit to Mobile.
I don't think we want to know.
Yeah.
Hey, ours is still going up here every day.
Yeah, here too.
But But if you've never been to Linux Fest, this is a great one to go to because they're very friendly. The thing I always appreciate about this one too is, so far as politics goes, because open source communities can be very political. The people that go to this one and the guy that runs this one are very apolitical. And that's what I love about it. He literally, when he chooses the sessions, it's blind. His form, when you apply to submit a paper for a talk, his form doesn't even have some of the things that other conventions will have on it. So that's one of the things I always appreciate about this show is it's purely about the technology, nothing else.
You know, that's really refreshing and appealing because technology can often be a driver with politics, whether it's corporate politics or national politics, or world politics. And I always feel that we do best with technology when we kind of pull that out.
Depoliticize.
I do too.
Because you get down to what really counts in the technology, you know, what does it really do what we say it does, or does it, you know, whatever it might be we're talking about. I that's always when it's the best for me, and that makes me the happiest.
but this has been they've been doing this one for over, let's see, 2018 when was the 10th anniversary of it, and I'm hoping they make it to 20 years, that because it would be one of the very few Linux Fests that have lasted that long. Even now, it's one of the very few that have lasted as long as it has.
Well, I just configured my desktop. It's $5,602, and I think the show host should help us pay for new boxes.
Joel, what do you think? I'm sorry. Could you please speak to our sponsor?
Yeah.
It's like, actually, Larry, there's a problem your Yeti's not working.
You can send us some. Oh, and rumor has it, too. I think they're working on a Thelio-style laptop.
I did. I saw that up there too. It's on the site.
I think the problem with the funding, guys, though, is that our sponsor is still trying to figure out how to monetize our customer, our one listener.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but, you know,
I agree.
It's all 12 gen, by the way, System 76. System 76 is a great company. It's not the only company. Even some of the bigs are starting to allow you to order Linux on certain systems. So if you're wanting to learn Linux but are afraid to install it on something you have, this is a great way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, for what it's worth, I know, Joel, you don't, you know, you're way into Linux, but even the masses in our club with 1,400 people, I've got a running list of people who would like to be part of a Linux SIG group. And right now I've got 12 people on the list. If I can get two or three more, I'll start a little group. And I mean, these are, you know, old folks that want to learn about Linux.
I mean, that other thing too, is when you go to the show, you have people in the community at all levels. You have complete noobs. You have, guys that literally Eric Raymond was there. All right, Eric Raymond, if you do not know who he is, you should. He is the man who wrote the book The Cathedral and the Bazaar, which talks about open source software, and he actually has a new project that he did talk about, and I actually did attend a talk on there about it's called Shimmer. It's available on GitLab. If you want to know more about it, I don't want to make this part of the show go too long, but Eric has been in the open source community for gosh ever. Probably one of the ones that were involved in creating it. So
I believe he was.
You got really super smart guys that are there, then you got people who are just learning how to do it for the first time, and that's why my choice for Linux Fest is the Southeast Linux Fest, even over the one that happens here in Ohio, because there is one here too. But so if you've never been to one, don't be afraid. Check these guys out next year. It's always about this time.
Maybe next year I'll meet you there.
That's right. Don't be scared. Don't be scared. Just, just go.
Yep. Come and you can have some barbecue or some, I had Bojangles twice when I was there.
Oh, dear.
Yes, but it was great, a great time as always. So,
and there you go.
Yep.
All right.
Apple well, stuff.
And
Apple
let's not stuff, forget, so. You had Cheerwine too, so don't forget that.
Very of true. Course. My favorite there. North Carolina soda.
Definitely North Carolina thing.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. So the next thing that I wanted to go ahead and talk about is a follow-up to WWDC. You know, there have been some additional information that's come out since the keynote from earlier last week, and just want to know what your thoughts are on everything that you've heard since then.
Well, I think they've certainly spent some time. I think people have spent some time playing with things and looking at things, and and we're starting to read more things and hear about features that weren't really necessarily talked about that people are discovering or learning about in the days following the keynote. And I think it's been kind of interesting. I mean, one of the kind of light and fluffy things is everybody wants a MacBook in midnight.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, that was one thing I kept seeing over and over.
Of them to go around.
Oh, it's very true. It's very, very true. I have a feeling that if you're going to want to buy a new M2 based MacBook Air, I think you're going to be able to go ahead and
the
do
silver
it
light
problem
will be stacked
any
up
other
in
color.
Corner.
Say again.
The silver one will be stacked in the corner. He said.
Oh, absolutely.
The silver light, that kind of a brownish.
Oh, the starlight.
Starlight. That's it. Starlight. Yes. That won't sell.
No.
But I did hear one thing about it. He probably saw it. MKBHD on YouTube said that the Midnight one actually is a fingerprint magnet. So that if you're
probably
not
true.
Into fingerprints on things, I don't have a problem with it because I can clean it.
You know, we always talk about the colors that don't sell. And I remember a number of years ago when Apple started to release, rose gold, pink, metallic pink, as I
Bros
call it.
Gold.
Right.
And we said, oh, it won't sell. But really what it was more for the Asian markets. They tended to buy it.
Yeah.
Right.
More than anything. So we got to remember that, just because we think something won't sell. Right. Doesn't right.
The US Joel, I have to agree market. With you on the fingerprint thing. I had a solid black Surface laptop once. It was the same way. Yep.
Mine's black.
I finally got rid of it for that reason. It was horrible.
I didn't. It doesn't bother me. That stuff doesn't bother
me. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
It's like I just wipe it off on the days that it does bother me, that kind of thing.
There you go.
Like Joel said, it really is not a big deal. But that's one thing I've been hearing. You know, you're starting to hear that the people are getting kind of excited about the M2. Better in some ways, not better in other ways. And some of these things I know we're going to talk about. I know we're going to be talking a little bit about Stage Manager. People have started to use it both on the Mac and on the iPad. And we'll talk about that shortly. But the point is you're starting to see these comments come out. People are actually using some of these features. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting things. I think one of the things I see a lot of conversation about is the lock screen. And my thought was, who cares? It's just a lock screen. But what I didn't really think about is Apple hasn't allowed anything to change the lock screen in a very long time. And that's why it becomes a big deal for some folks.
Yeah.
And certainly I played with some of the some of those changes, and there's some interesting things that you can that you can put on the display now. So yeah, there's been a lot of I think people are still feeling their way through it. There's definitely been a lot of interest. I at first I thought this is going to be another very meh, who cares kind of set of releases, but there's a lot of little things that seem to be getting people geared up a little bit more than I've seen the last couple of releases anyway. Just little stuff, this lock screen stuff, the stage,
right.
The stage manager stuff, you've seen some people talking about the using your iPhone as a webcam. There's third party stuff that's done that, but we've never had that incorporated in the OS before. So
agreed.
It's like, oh, so those agreed. Things seem to be getting people kind of in very specific ways, getting people more excited than before. And that's what I'm seeing this last week is kind of ramping up of those kinds of stories. Do you guys agree?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me. I don't have anything. Well, I do have my 2017 iPad, which should get the 16 beta, but it's not public yet. You're registered in the developer.
I am.
Yes.
I'm not yet. So, but you know, it's hard for me to get too excited about it. You know, like the one webcam is your iPhone is a webcam.
I'll tell you why that excites me a little bit. Maybe it's for other people too. I don't know.
Right.
Is I tend to leave my laptop docked when I'm at my desk.
Yep.
But yeah. I can't open it. I don't really have the room to just sit and open it and get it up in a place where it's going to do a good shot on my face.
Is there a place for that?
Don't even. remember what I told you a long time ago is that, you know, in the old days, when motion pictures, you know, and all that started to come out, people said, "Oh yeah, yeah, you know, they've got a face for radio."
Yes.
Well, I've got a voice for print.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, people definitely don't want to hear me, let alone see me. But here you guys are, y'all get to listen to me.
That's right.
It's kind of scary, but there you go. And I think that I was thinking about buying a third party webcam, but I don't need it all the time. And it seemed like an expense. I was kind of like,
Well, and that's very important, especially when you're on the go
I've got my phone with me anyway.
Right. Right. The nice thing about this is, you know, with the right case, with the right holder, depending on where you are, the camera on your phone is going to be much better than the camera on your
computer. And that was the other thing too, the quality of the camera on your phone, being able to leverage that is a big thing, I think, for some folks. Not for everybody.
No, us included.
But again, the one thing that Apple's been very good at is adding these little things.
I agree.
These little things that bring in this group of people and the little thing that brings in that group of people. It's, you know, I guess it's kind of like herding cats, but it does seem to be effective for them.
Yes.
You know what, Chris, to back up what you said, I just, while you guys were starting to talk about that, I went and looked at two or three sites that, and they actually are in agreement here. The five top things that have stayed from the day we heard about them until now as the top big things: lock screen, number one. Mm-hmm. Stage manager, number two.
Mm-hmm.
Continuity camera, number three.
Mm-hmm.
The Apple Pay and wallet changes, number three. Mm-hmm. And lastly, which I absolutely do not agree with, home app changes. I'm here to tell you that Apple is never going to get home app right.
I have to agree with you.
I just don't. Google has mastered that years ago.
No, based on their privacy policies and the way that they gather and use data.
You're right. That doesn't allow them to.
It doesn't allow them to have that thing work right.
But so even us Apple heads, I mean, we use Google Home. It's just the way we do it.
And I think Apple will continue to improve the Home.
Yep. I agree.
For a while. And I'm not saying that the changes that they've made to Home aren't interesting. I'm not a big Home user anyway, because I've lived in apartments on and off. And so for me, it hasn't been all that practical to worry about that stuff. Although there's tools coming out to make that better too. But what I'm getting at is that they are so far behind where Google is in this space.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it, no matter what they release, even if
it's like Chris said, they're their own worst enemy. HomeKit. I mean,
I'm okay with that.
iCloud secure video, whatever they call it is just terrible, but they want it that way for privacy,
right?
HomeKit secure video, that's it,
right? But the point is, though, and you just said it, it's totally based on their privacy policy, and that's the way that they want it. They don't want to be as intrusive. Well, unfortunately,
if you have this
thing work the right way, they really need to know more about you and the way that you use those devices.
Yeah.
All right. So that they can be predictive.
And I would argue that that's also what holds them back on Siri. We talked about the limitations of Siri, but I think that has a lot to do with that as well.
Right.
And because those things are all kind of tied together. But I think that right now, anyway, it may not be true in a few years, but right now they make more money on the notion of privacy than they do on their home and their Siri.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as long as that's true, the economics of it for them are going to be, yeah, well, you know, we'll throw some lip service at this stuff, but you know, it's not their bread and butter right now.
Right.
And I don't think they care that it's not their bread and butter at this point. They might tomorrow, but today I don't think they do. I mean, I don't think they don't care, but they don't, it's not their emphasis. Let me put it that way.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with all of it. And but there are still some, you know, really exciting things that are coming up with iOS 16 and macOS Ventura Highway, as I'm going to refer to it from now on. But Chris, you've downloaded both of those operating systems. In fact, you're running a MacBook that you're using for this podcast on Ventura right now. Is that not correct?
I am. And it works pretty well for an early beta. It works pretty well. There are some instability problems as expected. For example, I have a third party Ethernet adapter that when I plug it in, it crashes the system right now. I expect those kinds of things early on betas. I mean, that's fine. And they'll get better as time goes on. But for the most part, for an early beta, it actually runs pretty well. And it certainly, you start to see, again, I mentioned already the whole using your iPhone as a webcam. I've tried that and it does work and it works reasonably well. It's also dependent on all of the kind of handoff, the sharing, the continuity and handoff kind of services. It's all part of the same. And all you gotta do, the thing with the iPhone, you just got to bring it near the MacBook.
Yeah,
that's all you got to do. And boom, it shows up as an available camera in your apps.
Nice.
Wow. I mean, you have to turn. I changed it back. There's one more step. Yeah, on the iPhone, you have to turn on that under the handoff and continuity stuff. You have to turn it on and say you're allowing it.
Sure.
But that's about the extent. Otherwise, you know, people would be panicked that their phone could automatically just link on the camera without any warning.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Bad. And that very would true. Be bad.
And that could be very bad.
So they do make you turn it on your phone. But other than that, it's all pretty automatic. If you want it, it's there. And they're doing, you know, I think they're doing the right things for it. There's still some things that you and I have talked about that they don't do yet that I know you'd like to see relating to the way the Finder works. They haven't changed any of that. That's all pretty much the same. And I'm hesitant to go into any too many details because there's a few things that make me kind of go, gee, I wonder if this is how it's going to stay or is it going to change in the coming betas? Because we've seen that before. So where they change how something works, where something works, even if the feature's there or not there. I do know that a lot of folks have commented on the features that were announced. Some of the live capture kind of features that were announced at the WWDC that are not here yet. They're not in the betas yet. And I think we're going to see more of that. Like last year, it was all related to the continuity not really being there until very late in the game. And I think that's going to be the same case this time. Some of the stuff that they announced at WWDC just isn't there. It won't be there till later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a promising start. In my opinion, it's a very promising start. And I think what we can do is, and the components do work well together. Everything does work, you know, even better than before. But I do think we ought to probably slide into the conversation about stage managers, since that's a big part of this. Number two on Larry's list.
I agree.
Number two on Larry's list, as he just mentioned.
Yep.
It's a huge thing. It looks very similar on the Mac and on the iOS. A lot of the comments I've been seeing is that it's not necessary on the Mac. I can understand that argument because we also already have the whole Mission Control thing the Launchpad versus the regular desktop Finder kind of environment.
Yep.
Now we have a third one.
I think it looks better though than that.
And some people said that too. Some people think that the only reason they put it in the Mac was to appease iOS users, iPad users. And I'm not sure that's entirely true. It might be, but I don't think that's the only reason that they put it on the Mac. I do think it offers an interesting way to group things together, works. I think all of these OSs, whether it's Windows, whether it's Mac, whether it's even Linux, they have a trouble with this whole notion of a workspace. And they all do it different ways. And I don't really like the way anybody's done it, including the Mac. This is now another approach to workspaces. You're going to cluster the apps you want together. They're going to pop up together. And you can toggle between them. The downside of this is these models take a lot more memory, which is why there's some limitations on the iPad, I think. They take more memory and they take memory being able to operate a certain way.
Well, you know, there is a limitation for stage.
There are.
The biggest limitation for Stage Manager with iOS, all right, and iPad OS is that you must have an M1.
Absolutely true.
Based and I think that's iPad.
And if you read Apple's explanations, that has a lot to do with how they're managing memory and how they're utilizing memory.
Right. According to Apple, they want to deliver an experience with the immediacy that users expect from iPad's touch-first experience, and it requires a large amount of memory.
It does incredibly take a lot of memory.
Incredibly fast storage and flexible external display I/O, all of which are delivered on iPads with the M1 chip.
Well, and I've seen that,
I'm okay with that. I mean, the people are out there whining.
I've seen the argument that, oh, they're just trying to sell the pros. Well, that's not exactly true because it also works on the iPad, the non-pro iPad that has an M1. It's about having the M1 chip.
Right. It is about the M1 chip. There is an iPad Air that has an M1. Yes.
So I don't think it's purely about upselling. Not purely anyway. I mean, I think there's probably some sort of physical performance issue. And you could argue that, yeah, maybe they should release it anyway. But again, if it requires a certain way of being able to swap memory, and those A14s and A15s just don't do that, do it that way, your experience is not only going to be poor, it's going to be almost non-functional potentially.
Right.
So I think Apple's probably doing the right thing by saying, look, this chip is a requirement to make this thing work. Because again, they're not saying you've got to buy an iPad Pro. They're saying you've got to buy an iPad with an M1. That's a little different. It sounds like I'm nitpicking there. And I guess I am a little bit, but it's true. And it's okay. I mean, it seems to be, again, we have to take them at face value on that right now, right? Until somebody does an expose and shows how the memory is really getting used or something. But having said that, I think it's fine. I mean, you know what? Even if it was just on the Pro devices, people whined because why were they calling it a Pro device? It was the same as the other devices. There was no difference. And why do I even need this Pro device? And they were recommending, a lot of pundits were recommending that you buy the lower end iPads because there was no reason to buy the higher end one. Well, now there's a reason.
Now there's a reason.
Is that a big deal? I mean, so now we're going to whine because there's a reason?
Right. Well, we were also talking about, and you and I have been talking about this for years, ever since 2017 when the iPad Pro first came out. I would like to see Pro-based apps, please. All right.
And I think
I would like to see Pro-based features, please. Well, here you go. Here's a professional-based feature.
Yep. All right. And I've used it. And I've used it on the iPad. When you hook the iPad to an external monitor, and that's one thing we're not talking about either. When you hook an iPad to an external monitor now, you actually get the full screen, kids. Mm-hmm. It's not a chopped up window. It's not a chopped up window.
Last time I
like
used it with mine, you did not.
This is an iOS 16 thing. And you get the whole thing. And on the external screen, it uses Stage Manager. It doesn't use it on your iPad unless you turn it on your iPad.
So basically, it is sensing the monitor's resolution then.
And so it's a little odd because when you resize the windows, they like resize in notches. And I think that has more to do with maintaining the correct aspect ratios and maintaining iPad apps, you don't chop off part of a window in an iPad app, right? You just don't. No. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of part of what I think is going on here. But you can still split the screen. You could still do all the things that you normally do. And I believe if I remember correctly, you can do 4 on the external screen and 4 on the internal screen. And it kind of treats them like they're separate devices, kind of. And that's okay. You can still drag and move things between the two, but it isn't like it's just an extended desktop like in Windows. It's not like that. It's like they're separate and they're running their own kind of instance of the iPad OS. It kind of behaves like that. And on, again, on the big screen, it's stage, it uses Stage Manager automatically. On the little screen, you have to turn it on if you want it on. So you could have theoretically one screen with it on, one screen with it off.
True.
You could do that. Mm-hmm. And I think Stage Manager works fine. There's still, I mean, I would still argue that traditional desktop multitasking, I hate to use that word because it's never really was multitasking. It's really task switching, but that, you know, neither here nor there, I guess. But having said that, I guess I say Stage Manager is still a little clumsier than what you see like on Windows and whatnot, but it's not necessarily clumsy because it's clumsy. It's clumsy because it kind of does things like moves the app you're using to the center, and people aren't used to that yet. I think it's more a matter of just not being used to the way it works. And it's a little different because it'll shuffle the other windows out of the way, which I think is kind of nice in the sense that I never lose a window behind another window.
Right.
Because part of it's always sticking out. And that's actually a good thing, but it's throwing people for a loop right now.
Well, it's only because they're not used to working.
And that's what I'm thinking
with the device that way. You know, we've been used to Alt Tab on the Windows side and Command Tab on the Mac side for God, since years. Windows has been Windows and since OS X has been OS X. All right. So it's interesting that, you know, people are rebelling against such, you know, long established paradigms and then saying that the feature doesn't work right.
Well, the other thing,
what people do, though.
Yeah, I know that.
And the other thing that this has driven, though, is people are back to the iPad versus Mac wars. And there really shouldn't be a thing. The use cases are different. I still argue the use cases are different. And they aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. You know, I mean, I may be sitting here at my desktop, but now I need to go away and do something else. And I'll take the iPad with me. I won't haul my laptop with me. I'll haul my iPad with me. And when I come back, I'll sit down and I'll be back at my laptop. And it sounds like, well, that's an odd thing, but it's really not. And I've read a number of use cases where people said, yeah, I cannot take a laptop into the field. That's not functional for me. The iPad's what's functional. And I'm the same way. I find a lot of times the iPad's more functional when I'm on the road or floating around or doing whatever I've got to do, you know, for work. When I walk away from the desk, sometimes the iPad's just the way to go. Uh-huh. But it has a different workflow and it has a different dynamic. And I think Apple's trying to figure out what that is still. I mean, every time they revise this notion, it becomes more interesting. I even read somebody who said, well, gee, I can't stand all this. It's too clumsy. It's too odd. I'd rather use an Android pad. And I said, you realize how many apps don't work well on Android tablet? They work great on Android phones, but they don't work that well on a tablet because—
Boy, that is so true.
There is no consideration of any of this. Mm-hmm. How can you possibly say that's a better experience? Because it's not. The apps are why, you know, the apps aren't there and Google's working very hard to get it there. I mean, they really are. I think they're spending some time on it. I hope they don't abandon it quickly. I hope they keep doing that. Because I'm really excited about some of the things they're announcing as well, you know, forthcoming. But right now, you know, we're focused on what iOS 16 and iPad OS 16 looks like. And iPad OS 16 is a very interesting jump in the way that they're doing the multitasking. And I think people are going to find it, that in conjunction with being able to put it on a bigger screen, you're going to see a certain chunk of people, even above and beyond what have already done it, say, you know what? The iPad's not my only my main computing device. Some people are going to do that. And it's going to be more than you think, I would suspect. So and the price points aren't that different anymore, you know, because the hardware, everybody's like, why does the iPad cost so much? Have you seen the hardware that goes into an iPad?
Ooh. Yeah.
Of course, this is not a crappy screen, especially when you start getting the high-end pro ones. I mean, you're talking about the whole little LED thing with 120 hertz and everything just highly, highly optimized. I just don't see, again, it's a different use case, and I think people are you're going to see a bunch of people go that route. As a result of this. Now, will it be everybody? Of course not. And will the iPad replace the Mac? Of course not. You know, it's, again, it's a different, you know, people buy laptops and desktops. You know, I think it's more akin to that.
Yeah.
So
I agree. So there's All right, so there's new features that are coming out that are going to be processor specific. They're going to be processor specific for a reason. It's not to make an extra buck, but it's actually to handle the technical requirements.
And yes, I'd like to see Pro Apps too, by the way.
Or features, right? There's this particular. I think this is going to be an evolutionary release as opposed to a optimization release. There's going to be new, obviously, with Stage Manager. There's new stuff. There's new features that are coming out that are going to help drive some sales as opposed to, well, you know, we gave you the good stuff. We gave you the goods last time, and now we're going to go ahead and really make it work right. So, but we'll see what happens. The last thing, though, say again.
No, I just said, I hope that's the case.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah,
that,
me
that,
too.
That does tend to be the way things tend to run with those guys. So, but the last thing that I wanted to go ahead and really kind of touch on before we get into our picks is the new Apple Buy Now, Pay Later service that they're actually calling Pay Later. All right. Effectively what this is a lot like Affirm or Klarna or other services that are out there that will allow you to go ahead and with some level of quote unquote down payment on the device, score your new item of choice and then pay for it over time. With Affirm, depending on the cost of the device, you can go with either a 4 or 6 week sort of payment plan where every couple of weeks they go ahead and, or I'm sorry, four or six payments. Every 2 weeks they go ahead and they charge your card or either credit card or debit card of choice, and you make another payment on
or PayPal,
and they charge you depending on, again, four payments or six, they charge you the appropriate level of payment, and then anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks you've paid it off, right? So the idea here is that you can get your MacBook Pro, your new totally awesome M2 based midnight blue MacBook Air, and you pay for it over the course of 8 to 12 weeks, right? The nice thing about this is that it gives you that many pay periods to go ahead and come up with the payment plan or to complete the payment plan. And at the end, it's a very much like 90 days, same as cash. At the end of the whole program, your line of credit closes and you've paid for the device and you don't have this really long, large credit card bill where you're stuck paying interest on a expensive device for the next 4 or 5 years, right? So it's kind of cool. From what I understand, Apple's going to be backing this particular.
Yeah, they're back. They're holding the note.
Yep, they are. They are in fact holding the note. And I've used Affirm for a couple of purchases, and I like it. I do wish that they wouldn't do every 2 weeks. I do wish that they had based on your credit or your credit score, your credit history. Some level of, hey, can I do this over a period of months as opposed to weeks? But that's just a personal thing. But it is nice that they are able to go ahead and get you done and over with in a short period of time.
If you want longer, they just want you to use a credit card or use a line of credit situation.
Well, actually, this is coming out as a line of credit. They do go ahead and hit your credit.
It's a temporary line of
credit. It is a temporary line of credit, right? It is a temporary line of credit. It lasts as long as the payment program is active, and then at the end of that, it closes.
All right. Opposed to, I'll give you an example. When I bought the P6P, I used Google financing for it, which is really Synchrony Bank or whoever they're using under the hood.
Yeah,
the point is, but it is a true line of credit in that as I pay things off, that line of credit's still there.
Right.
And I can buy new things on it. Whereas with this, it's not. It's a one-time.
Right.
One-time use.
One-time use line of credit. Right. Which can be good or bad, depending on how you want to look at it. I mean, you're not qualifying for. It's not like PayPal credit, which is also Synchrony.
Right. Absolutely true.
All right. It is just for the purchase. It is for the purchase price of that device. And once that device is paid off, it's gone. Apple, as Larry mentioned, Apple is going to hold the note on this. They're going to finance all of these through Apple Finance. So, we'll see how things go. This is going to be a new feature in Wallet. So it probably won't be available next month when the Apple MacBook Air starts to become available with the M2 processor, but it should be available this fall, potentially, or before the holiday buying season starts this year. So it'll be interesting to see who qualifies, how much they qualify for, and whether or not it's going to be as quote unquote exclusive as or stringent in requirement as the Apple Card is.
Yeah.
Are they doing this interest free?
Yes, it is, from what I
understand. Okay, then I can tell you right now, the person who qualifies for this will have a decent credit score.
Period. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. This is not going to be for everyone. So, but I will tell you, because they're going to want to make certain that they're going to get paid for the product that they're sending you. So, but it will be
kind of like Vegas. The house doesn't lose.
Yes. Yes. The odds always favor the house. So we'll see how this works though. But
that'll be interesting.
You know, they're going to give Affirm and Klarna some run for their money. Cause I know that they're always usually available at checkout for these kinds of things. So we'll have to wait and see, but that is the episode. Gentlemen, I want you to go ahead and warm up your picks if you got them. Before we do get to our pick of the week segment, I do want to go ahead and just take a moment and let our listeners know, or should I say our listener know that our show picks are typically hardware, software.
You're being so hard on us.
I know. Basically, hardware, software, and other items of interest that we have individually purchased and actually use and like enough that we'd like to recommend them to you, our listener. They are not paid advertisements or items with which we have any kind of an affiliate marketing relationship. We sincerely believe in these picks and we bring them to you at the end of each show as a service because we like you. I would also like to say that itechgear.org does have a editorial policy. And if there were any kind of paid advertisements or some sort of an affiliate marketing relationship with any of the producers of any of the products, software, hardware, et cetera, that we were to speak of, we would have to disclose that up front before disclosing what the actual pick was. So I want to go ahead though.
It almost takes us longer to say that than actually talk about the picks.
And your mileage may vary.
Thank you. And your mileage may vary.
But at least we're being upfront with our listener.
We have to be.
Yeah,
we do. Have to be. And that's
we do.
Good.
We do. So I do want to go ahead though and start off with you, Joel. You've been away and you've had some very interesting things. You did talk about some of this though a little bit earlier, but why don't you go over it again, just very briefly?
Sure. Well, my lead pick is one I wish to buy. And I already talked about it. the any of the Thelios desktops from System 76 all running Pop OS, or it is Ubuntu 22.4 LTS.
Right.
All right. That's the other alternative. And the Mega can be very, very expensive.
Yes.
Yeah, you can definitely, in their design tool, you can probably build a system that costs over $10,000.
That I would not doubt. I was looking at it myself there earlier during the pre-show, and hubba, those things look really nice.
Yeah. Besides, even by the way, even the little one looks really good. I mean, yeah, they all look the same. And it's, you know, it just depends on what your needs are, which one you would get. The little one would be a perfect little server for the house, you know, with up to 48 terabytes of storage. And really, you don't have to put in fantastic graphics cards into these. You're not going to be playing games on these. You could, but
well, not on the lower end stuff, but on the higher end stuff, most definitely you could.
Yes,
I mean the higher end, as I saw, will support up to four different GPUs. So with at least 12 gigabytes of memory on each GPU, which is not bad. It's very nice.
Yes, so those are my picks. Don't kill me if I killed your wallet. the next one is a tool I actually took with me on my trip, the Tech Smarter 26,800 milliamp hour power bank. We are fans of Anchor here. We all love it.
Yes, we are.
I do too. But I was looking for very specific things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find a power bank that could do 30 watts out so I can get the Pixel 6 to charge up.
Oh, do quickly. Fast charging.
Quickly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the fast
This supports it. And it also can charge off of the 30 watt charger, either the Google one or the one I talked about previously from, I have to look at the other one. Where's the other one from? actually, it's right here because I just brought that bag upstairs and I actually got to take it back down because that's the charger used downstairs. SyncWire is the one I have, the 30 watt charger there. That works with it too. It's usually how I charge it. It can charge the Pixel 6 Pro multiple times. Mm-hmm. I have got two lights left after having it. And using I have both this one and another one with me. This is the only one I used all weekend, and I still have two lights left, and I can probably charge that phone again. So it's a little heavy. It's not designed for one of those ones that you just grab a quick charge on. But if you have like an all-day conference in a concrete tomb, like most conferences are in, it's the perfect thing for you.
Nice.
I recommend the 200, and at $50, it's not bad.
It's a heck of a deal.
No, for 26,800, that's pretty good. All right.
And it wasn't the things that I like about it, even better than most of the Anchors or the Rovios, which I wish the Rovio were still on Amazon, but they're not anymore. But it has a texture on the outside. So if you're holding this and your phone together, you're not going to drop this.
That's good to hear.
So, I mean, and it does, it has the USB power delivery for the 30 watts out. It also has two regular USB ports. One of those is, I'm trying to figure out their symbology. One of them does have a light green on one. So I assume that one probably produces more current than the other one. So, you can't go wrong with those. It's going in my bag when I go down to Lake Hope for the 4th of July with the family. It's something I recommend. I think everyone should have something like this because you never know when you're out and about if you're going to need that charge.
Well, you've heard me say that I have never had a power bank in my use cases. I never really needed one, but I have to tell you, I am going to be spending the day in August at a data center because we're doing some failover testing between data centers. So I'm going to spend entire freaking day there. And guess what I'm going to buy before I go there?
Probably one of these.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so this is a good one to look at.
Yep. And $50 it's totally a totally easy pickup. I mean, it's not like trying to buy one of the big power of things with a handle on them and not like carrying it either. Yes. So that's my picks.
Awesome. Well, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Larry McJunkin, what is your pick of the week?
Well, again, we don't do collusive marketing on this show. We do pay for these things ourselves. But that said, yes. Anchor, if you're listening, I'll put my phone number in the show notes.
I already have two of these. This is a screaming price, Larry.
I know.
And we have to say how much we all, again, we all like Anchor a lot, and we like the products. They have a couple products I don't like, but for the most part,
as Chris Cavula mentioned earlier in a different context, sometimes this is smaller things that matter, and that's the case with these guys. The Anchor PowerPort Nano 20-watt USB Type-C wall charger, but in this case, it's in a 2-pack, and it's sold at Costco. So while the 2-pack is still on sale for only $19.99 for a 20-watt charger, that's what Apple gets for one of them, and it's about 4 times larger than this guy. I think it's a no-brainer purchase for anybody that charges via USB-C, has an iPhone. It's not quite enough for the Pixel 6 Pro. It'll charge it, of course, but it won't fast charge it.
Yeah.
Right. Anchor has a new one that's identical to this, same size and everything, and it is a 30-watt charger, but it's a few more bucks, and it's a new product.
And I've said this before in this show, but I have their 65-watt charger, which is also very small, guys. It's not very big.
Right. Yeah.
And I use it because I also try to do my MacBook and my iPad Pro and other things that draw even more. And it's phenomenal. It's a wonderful product.
Yeah, if you guys can remember the original iPhone chargers, the little blocks, the little small ones.
Yeah, they're that big.
This thing is only about 4% bigger than that. It really is small.
Yep.
So if you're worried about... Yeah, go ahead.
The Amazon price for one is $17.99. Go get them at Costco, folks.
Yeah,
if you're worried about quality, don't be, because Anchor truly makes some of the best charging products on the planet. So again, $19.99 at Costco. It's online and it's in some of their warehouses. Call before you make a trip.
Yeah,
the URL's in the show notes, and that's it. Back to you, Chris.
All right. Well, I'm not including this as a pick this week because I haven't had the opportunity to go ahead and use it. But I do want to say that it will be showing up, hopefully showing up.
If it's any good.
If it's any good. But this is something that we've been talking about in our CarPlay and Android Auto related discussions. I've got a wired head unit that supports both Android Auto and CarPlay. And while I like it very, very much, the problem that I've got is that, of course, is that it's wired. And where do you put my car? Is a 2014 Highlander. And it unfortunately doesn't have any real nice, easy place to go ahead and store the device while it is in fact connected. If I were to stick it someplace close, it would have to be in one of the cup holders in the front seat. And kind of, if I'm traveling with anybody else, that ain't gonna work. So, the nice thing about something like this, and this one is specifically for Android Auto only, hence AA wireless. This is a wireless adapter that can be used with Android Auto. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to take a look at this, and we'll see how this thing stacks up, how quick it is, and how quick it is to initially pair, and then afterwards.
Chris, did you get it at Indiegogo? Is that where you got it?
I did. I did. And it was at a reduced cost, but right near the end of the campaign. But this can be further and additional information can be found on it at https://aawireless.app. So we're going to take a look at it and see how it goes. I will tell you that it is a big deal to have some things like this, especially since it was very difficult earlier this year to actually find a head unit that supports both wired and wireless CarPlay and Android Auto based connections.
One interesting thing I'd love to hear you report on next show is this is the only one of this kind of devices that claims to work right out of the box. Most of them come with a really pain in the butt setup process.
Right. Apparently this one is just, it's a plug and play.
Yep. Kind of thing. Plug and play.
So, cause usually what you've got to do is you have to turn on both Bluetooth and wireless on your device. You find the thing via Wi-Fi, you pair with it via Bluetooth. And then after that, it uses, a Wi-Fi connection to continue to pass information back and forth at a higher rate of speed than Bluetooth can handle. The one that I have for CarPlay is a completely separate unit. And it does, again, only CarPlay. This one does only Android Auto. But there is a great deal of lag back and forth between the two.
That's the case with the Motorola one, too.
So we'll have to wait and see how this one works on Android Auto. So otherwise, you know, it's cable all the way. So,
which is not all bad.
No, it's not. You get some
not really with music. Audio. It's not.
No. You get some really good audio quality out of a cable connection, but still, it's a lot more convenient and a lot easier to get things going when it's all wireless. So, but I couldn't find when I was in the process of getting a head unit for my vehicle to do CarPlay because my 2014 app. Toyota wasn't doing CarPlay in their vehicles, so it has to be third party for me. I could not find a wireless CarPlay head unit anywhere.
Lexus online, just now went stores. Wireless.
Say again.
Lexus just now went wireless. 2022s.
See, I couldn't find one. I checked online. I checked in stores. Checked a number of different stores, and unfortunately it just didn't work. Nothing available. Wired they got coming out the wazoo, but not wireless. So we'll see how this works. All right, but that, kids, is it for this edition of the iTech Gear Weekly, episode number 20. Larry solves his pixie problem, sort of. Again, recorded live Sunday, June 12th, 2022. I'm Christopher Sarah, and for Joel McLaughlin, Larry McJunkin, and Christopher Gavula, thank you very much for listening. Hey, we'll see you all.
Hey, one last little thought for those who celebrate today. You know, it's Father's Day, and we want to wish everyone a happy Father's Day as it's coming up there.
Next weekend.
Next weekend. Yes. Next weekend. You won't see us. Exactly. You won't see us. So. I think we ought to mention it.
So all of you fathers out there, yes. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.